Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Francisco L. Borges and the Melville Charitable Trust.
Faith here with your podcast, Welcome Toast. Winston Churchill said, "I must point out that my sacred rule of life is the smoking of cigars and also the drinking of alcohol before, after, and if need be, during all meals and in the intervals between them." Listen to our show in small bites or enjoy the whole thing.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet, I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. We have a grilling guy on this show. We're going to get you so excited about grilling beef tenderloin, even doing a pineapple upside down cake on the grill. We're going to do beer can chicken. Yes, it's a little Father's Day centric, although we're also aware that more and more women are grilling, grilling, grilling. So no matter what your gender is, anything in between, we would love to have you stay tuned for that. We have the cookbook Weber's Greatest Hits, Weber Grill. Mm-hmm. Jamie Perviance is our guest for that. We have two different wines to tell you about, and they are so unusual for a couple of different reasons. I'm with my treasured food buddies. These are people who make me want to get up in the morning. I'm not kidding. Senior contributors Chris Brosberry, Alex Province, and Mark Raymond. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Robin Doyen Aiken is our senior producer, often joins us on the show. Hey, Robin.
Hello.
I wanted to start with this and jump in here if you do something like this. If you're grilling burgers, there was something that I saw in, I think it was Food Network magazine, about all the kinds of toppings that you could put on a burger.
Yum.
So you all do this. You all have your favorites. Mm-hmm. And some people will buy, I don't know who buys barbecue sauce and dumps it on.
That's good.
I have a couple different barbecue sauces. I love bacon on it.
I do what you do. Yeah. Huge chunk of cheddar cheese, like that leaves teeth marks.
Yeah. As thick as the burger, right?
My burgers have chimichurri mixed into the mix already, and then I put a big chunk of provolone on top.
And chimichurri, for those who don't know.
Chimichurri is parsley, garlic, olive oil, salt and pepper.
Pureed up all day.
Nice little sauce. You mix that right into the burger meat, and then you let it sit for a little
while. Is that an Argentinian thing?
I don't think so. No. I think it's something that we invented here.
Sure. Burgers are
in your house.
We say chimichurri goes with everything, so why not put in our burgers?
All right.
Yeah.
So this is something I loved because I'm a buffalo wing fan. So Food Network magazine did a whole thing of burger toppings, and I love that they did a buffalo butter.
Right, Chris? Buffalo
so
butter.
So this is, you get the butter room temperature, and it's blue cheese in there with the butter, you know, softened. And then you add a buffalo-style hot sauce.
Frank's hot sauce. We are Frank's people. The original.
Chopped celery, if you
want.
You know, I don't need to do that, but some people will
do that.
But if
you like dipping your celery sticks in that
sauce. Oh, what a clever idea.
Put that on your burger bun. Or on the burger top itself and let it melt in, and then boom goes the roll.
Honestly, I can do that.
I can totally do that.
Buffalo burger.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm hungry again.
I might make that for this weekend.
Any restaurant discoveries? I mean, soon we have a restaurant from West Hartford coming on the show. Chris?
I went to Arethusa again, La Tavola and Bannon.
Oh, that's good.
The guys who do Arethusa the Farm in Litchfield County have opened a restaurant. It's been open for some time now. They have a home in Italy, and they are so into bringing real Italian cooking to Connecticut.
Most gracious guys I've ever met.
Really?
I met him when I was a young boy working at an antique shop in Litchfield. And I tell you what, this restaurant is just so much fun.
La Tavola.
Just one thing. It's strawberry rhubarb tart that they do. Their pastry chef is a genius. It's this little tart with coconut ice cream on top. knock your socks off.
Oh,
like,
wow.
So go there just for that little strawberry rhubarb tart, if nothing else.
And eat dinner too.
Yeah, and eat dinner too. But let me tell you, it's just, it's a, you know what it is?
And
it's
their wine list.
Yeah, it's a welcoming place. That's why I like it so much.
Okay, so now I have a discovery. And I wish I could tell you I'd been there, but I haven't yet. But I am so excited about this. I spoke to the Kellys, the Kelly family, in Canterbury, Connecticut. And they looked at each other and they said, oh, no, don't ruin this place. No, please.
Don't
please,
tell
please.
Anyone.
Seriously. But in Willimantic, Connecticut, there is a little-known restaurant called Tacos La Rosa.
Mm. Anybody?
And
no.
This no. place, huh? They said, because they've spent so much time in Mexico. They
Mexico.
Said, this is so like Mexico, they cannot believe it. So we're talking about Tacos La Rosa in Willimantic, Connecticut. If you're in the area, you want to take a road trip, I cannot wait to try this. Kellys, I apologize to you right now.
Okay. And you'll see
and
us there
thank
soon.
Thank you.
Thank All you. Of us.
I've got a good one. Downtown Hartford in the beautiful Goodwin Hotel. Has been beautifully restored. It is so gorgeous.
Hotel.
A French restaurant called the Harlan Brasserie opened up.
H-A-R-L-A-N?
Correct. And it has a sidebar with this electric blue coloring. It's so beautiful and decadent on the inside. You can have martinis as people pass by. Okay. It is such a gem to have this in Hartford. Really,
really
cool. Like,
the good one came out great if you haven't driven by it. It is beautiful.
They have some gorgeous rooms.
Yeah, gorgeous.
I haven't seen it.
Gorgeous.
When
gorgeous.
The hotel just reopened because I don't know how long it was closed and under renovation. Yeah. It was
how
a while.
How fun. Did you try food?
Yeah, we sure did. Been there twice now. Harlan Brasserie. Loved it. Had a great time.
I know you love the atmosphere, but the food was really good.
Yeah, we always sit at the bar and it's just brasserie style French food.
Now you're talking hotel food because I did an event for Carla Squatrito at Marriott downtown at the convention center.
Oh, yeah.
And I went into El Bar inside, which is really fun at night, by the way. And I said to them, what thing, if you took off the menu, people would kill you year round? And they said, you're not going to believe it. Winter and summer. Bolo. And I'm like, Bolognese? They said, trade word for Bolognese. Yeah. And I said, seriously? And they said, yeah, we're sending you out some.
Yeah.
And so out came Chef's Bolognese at the Marriott Hotel in downtown Hartford, and it was delicious.
Gotta try.
I'm a sucker for Bolo.
Okay, so I just wanted to do a shout out to them too. Can we do some wines?
Let's
because
have some wines.
We've got barbecue stuff coming up. We've got all kinds of things for you. We've got a champion oyster shucker who's going to tell you how you can shuck oysters at home with a little tiny trick. He's from the Oyster Club in Mystic. So we're going to get into all that. We've got two wines to tell you about that are pretty unusual. This one would be great with grilled food on Father's Day. Let me pour this into a glass and let's talk. Mark, tell us about this. So you discovered this.
Yeah, so this is Finca El Origen from the Uco Valley in Argentina. This is their Cabernet Sauvignon Reserva. A great value at $12 a bottle. And what I love about it is it's got complexity, it's got strength, but yet it's so elegant. It's got beautiful fruit notes of dark berries and plum, yet the tannins are just super soft.
You know what? I want this with grilled food. In fact, we had it with Chris's steak just before the show, and it was
just
really good.
Just by itself, it's a sipping wine. You can have fun with this.
Nice and elegant.
We have a picture of the label on the website. We always say call ahead because these poor wine stores can't stock everything. A good wine store will have this from the distributor within 24 hours. Maybe some people have this. $12 a bottle. It's a Cabernet Sauvignon. And Finca El Origen. Finca is kind of farm, Alex.
Like a farmhouse in the countryside.
Okay, El Origen.
From the original land.
Key question here, $12 a bottle. People can fool around with wine, as we all know in the show. We hate that in terms of crazy additives and dumping sugar into wine.
This is all natural, hand harvested. They control it from the grape all the way to the cellars, and they put it in the bottle. There's nothing added. There's no preservatives.
This is from Mendoza?
This is from Mendoza, Argentina.
Okay. So in Argentina, I'm telling you, they know beef. They know grilled food? Yeah. This is what they do.
They are some of the grill masters of the world.
They really are.
So it makes sense their wine's going to reflect that and go well with beef.
Absolutely.
You know, for if you're doing right? grilling for Father's Day or you're doing grilling for whatever reason, wow, what an affordable wine, around $12 a bottle. Really good discovery, Mark. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really, thank you. And really so good. At our website, foodschmooze.org. Before we go to the next wine, which is one of the most unusual discoveries we've had on the show, thanks to Chris Brosberry, I want to tell you about something, a three-ingredient espresso ice cream without a machine.
Really?
Huh. Okay.
Do tell.
Here's how you do it. You mix instant espresso with sweetened condensed milk and heavy cream, and you pop it in the freezer, and you have soft-serve ice cream.
Wow.
You might think I'm kidding.
I do.
So
I think
you're kidding. How long in the freezer?
Wait, what?
Like you take it out before it freezes?
I knew you would doubt me.
Yeah.
I'm not doubting you. I'm just
want to
Wait,
eat
do
it.
That again. What?
So why doesn't it freeze?
There is no ice cream maker necessary. There are no additives.
Nothing.
If you want to have like pure ice cream and you don't... You could add a little like crushed nuts
chocolate
on the
chips.
Top. You
oh,
could
yeah.
do you could do anything you want. Okay,
crushed
so
espresso beans in there.
How it works? I'm going to
okay,
do
how
it for
does
you
it work?
Again.
Don't have
okay?
before you go to bed.
You mix together instant espresso,
sure.
and I give the directions on the site.
Yep. The powdered
okay.
stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Yes, the powdered stuff.
But that's good.
And
for
sweetened
cooking.
Condensed yep. milk. We tell you how much on the site, foodschmooze.org. And then you mix in the heavy cream. And that goes in the freezer, and it freezes, and it becomes soft-serve ice cream. Is this
wow.
like one of the great summer things to give people?
I'd eat it myself with a spoon out of the bowl.
Ice cream.
Out of the freezer.
That's
I
understand. What I'm crazy
the,
about
yeah,
it.
The sweetened condensed
can I
milk
give credit?
Freeze
can
solid.
I give credit?
Yeah.
Let me give credit.
Is that
credit.
What it is?
Yeah.
I was
Genius.
Looking around on the internet to see if there was a way I could make ice cream without an ice cream maker. And it was on BuzzFeed.
But
I want to give him credit.
No, you did it again with the sweetened condensed milk. Because remember your last tip that I'm still blown away by is to make the caramel sauce. You just take that can and put it in a pot of boiling water and boom, you got caramel sauce.
You could use that for that.
To pour it over the top.
There you go.
Okay.
Two great recipes
All right.
from sweetened condensed
here,
milk.
Here, as promised, this is something Chris Prosperi found. If there is a wine that is so incredible with...
Yeah, right?
Crunchy Cheetos.
Oh.
Or, here's what I'm saying about this wine. If port, Zinfandel, and bourbon had a baby, this is the wine they would make together. This is the child, okay? And we discovered, opening one of my favorite snacks.
Crunchy
Cheetos. Crunchy.
Are you
going to
pass those Cheetos?
Chris, this
it's
is
genius.
Cooper and Thief. This is on our website, foodschmooze.org, with a picture and everything. It's a red wine blend. Chris, lay it on us.
Yeah, and I just... You know, I was at a dinner and they were serving this with a short rib and I was blown away because it's not a regular wine. It's a blend of Merlot, Syrah, Zinfandel, Petit Syrah, Cabernet. It's got all this blend in it and then it's aged in old bourbon barrels. It's not for everyone. It gets panned on the internet by wine experts, but I'm telling you, it has
you
something.
Love it. And
I
think
love
it's
it
really
and it's fun.
I'm about to have my Cheetos, crunchy Cheetos.
If you don't pass those Cheetos, I'm going to scream.
With it. And it's just like, so you can have a bag of Cheetos with a really interesting wine, and there you go. Sometimes it can just be that fun, can't it?
It can be.
You know what?
Pass
that
Cheetos.
Is so awesome. So Cooper and Thief, it's like selling out like crazy because... Yeah. There's something going on with wine that is now being aged in these bourbon, scotch,
whiskey.
In these whiskey barrels that add something.
Yeah.
And, you know, this one I say poured and
we're passing the Cheetos around. We are
actually sitting
in the studio.
This one is dark and jammy.
With orange hands.
With high vanilla.
Yeah, high vanilla because of the
oak. Some people, and that's American barrels, so they're doing...
Bourbon barrels.
So
totally.
It's a thing that's happening and people are loving it. Try one. So I would say this is a red wine blend from Cooper and Thief. They have a Cab, which is the one I want to try next because I have a feeling it's going to be a little less jammy.
Yeah.
What I would pair this with are certain cheeses.
Gorgonzola.
Like a gorgonzola
Taleggio.
Would be awesome.
Soft.
Yes.
Taleggio, yeah.
Awesome. Pair this with its opposite, which works in wine, going totally smoky, ribs on the grill against this.
It's just sometimes you get something in your mouth and you go, wow, what was that? And that's what happened here. It was a red wine in my glass, but when I tasted it, I wasn't drinking a normal, classically made red wine. And sometimes, to me, that's refreshing.
So for me, this wine would make the most astonishing sangria.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
That's a good
one. Wow.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't have to add anything to it.
Yeah. I mean, just you actually could add a little
add
bourbon.
Some sliced apples, the citrus, lime.
Because this is not, this is about 30, it can be $30 a bottle.
Like 25 to $30. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't add any more sugar to it.
But if you,
No.
But if you're doing ribs on the grill, wow, this is interesting, as is yours, Mark. So both of you, thank you so much. On our website, foodschmooze.org. Alex, you really think, you know, being Spanish, you really think that this could work as a...
It almost tastes like port. It's so fruity and rich, and you added, you know, it's almost like instant sangria. Pour it into a pitcher, throw in some chopped fruit, add a little soda water.
Can I do a shout out to Cigna Insurance Company?
Oh, yeah.
Because they have, what would we say, bankrolled the Keeney Park Food Sustainability Program in Hartford, Connecticut. And I think that is so amazing to invest in cities like this, especially Hartford, the city I grew up in. It's an amazing place. And thank you, Cigna, for doing this.
Right, oh, my Alex? Gosh. So good.
And we see other companies doing this throughout Hartford. Millions of dollars coming in to pitch in because Hartford's a small city and could become an incredible destination as people dive in and make it something.
Look at the history. And
this is true for Bridgeport, too.
Yeah,
all right? So, our cities that have both wealth and poverty, dive in, people, because we can make these cities incredible.
For everybody
across the spectrum. That's what this sustainability program is all about. So thank you, Cigna, and all these companies that have invested in our cities, in our main region. Really, so, so appreciated. Oysters and grilling, too, coming up. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. They are many. And I'm sad to say there's talk of cutting their benefits further. I don't even know what to say. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back. Because this city, oh, is my city, and I love it. Yeah, I love it. I was born in Macy. I got it made. And if I have got a way, I'm going to stay for life.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
Oh, yes, they did. This is the Food Schmooze Party offering the richness of life. Coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the east end of Long Island that meets the Hamptons. The senior producer is Robin Doyon Aiken. To hear this show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. So many people write to us and say, we plan our adventures, we plan our shopping trips, we get in the car just as the show is starting, and then off they go to the things that we talk about, or it gives them some kind of idea based on a recipe. And so I love that. Podcasts, meaning copies of the show so you can listen on your schedule. All of our curated recommendations, recipes, all that stuff is at foodschmooze.org. Here's what we have coming for you right now. I'm really excited about this because oysters, as much as I have tried, as long as this show has been on the air, right, you folks, I have tried to be good at shucking oysters, and I'm telling you, I am just terrible at it. I understand the theory where the muscle is, right, Chris?
I'm with you. I know how to do it. I don't like doing it. I find it messy. I get the juice all over me.
Slightly dangerous. I get
shell pieces all over the kitchen.
It can be dangerous.
It's the next day I still have the smell in my house because I got juice underneath something or in a drawer.
Well, but here's the thing. I think all of us on the show love oysters.
Oh, without a doubt.
So we go to people who know what they're doing. One of the people who really knows what he's doing is John Bertino. He lives in Westerly, Rhode Island, but he is Oyster Man at the Oyster Club in Mystic, Connecticut.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he does so many oysters, it's just ridiculous. When an oyster comes out at your plate, this man wants to make sure. He will tell other people filling in or helping. No. Right, yeah. Alex? This oyster is not going to somebody's plate. He wants it to be artistic when it arrives at your plate. This is John Bertino. Welcome to the Food Schmooze Party again.
Thank you very much, Faith. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So I'm going to ask you right off the bat to make sure that people who are like all of us can use a trick if they cannot get the knife into the oyster.
There's a trick?
There is a trick. And that is, somebody told me a long time ago, used to be an oyster woman on the Cape. She said, pop them in the freezer for a couple minutes. The oyster shell will slightly open. You can slip your knife right in and cut that piece of muscle, and then bingo bango.
Why didn't you tell me that? I would have done that all along.
Well, because we go out to get
oysters. Yeah, I do.
You know, we go to John. Yeah, so John, is it
true? You would be putting me out of business.
Yeah, I'm never going to do that.
No. Do you think that I have the kinds of oysters that you have, the access, the perfect icing, the
sauces,
the arrangement? But John, do you agree? Is that possible? 1 to 2 minutes in the freezer?
Yeah, you can do that. And what it relaxes the oyster itself and just makes slipping the knife into the back of the oyster so much easier. It really doesn't take that much muscle or pressure. There's a little sweet spot there, and it just makes it real easy to pop open. Then you just bring the knife across, cut that muscle, and then you do the undercut, and then there you go.
The undercut. What do you mean by the undercut?
The oyster has two muscles, one on the bottom shell and one on the top shell, and they use that to open and close the oyster shell. So you have to remove those two muscles.
Do you just scrape them toward you?
You bring it across the shell and make sure you can see where the muscle is. It's right there in front of you. You remove that muscle and the two muscles, and then that leaves the oyster loose in the shell.
Yeah, okay.
So, slurp it.
So are we cutting across the end of the muscle where it's attached to the shell, you know, straight across, or are we scraping the attachment area?
Basically, when you do the top shell, you bring it across.
Okay.
And then when you do the bottom one, you just scrape that one muscle.
Okay. Now, if we're trying oysters at home, I love to go to people like you because the juice of the oyster is in with the oyster itself, and that's part of what gives it its power, that salinity that is so of the terroir underwater. You know, I mean,
right.
Oysters, do you find that this is true? I have this friend, Jonathan Waters, who's an oysterman off of Stony Creek, and he has said to me for years, there is a difference between the taste of an oyster that I dig up 12 inches from another oyster. It's what's in the bottom soil right there in the water.
Your oysters are going to take on the flavor of where they're grown. And you know what? A lot of people, like Steve Malinowski, he has Fisher's Island oysters. And what he does when he'll try an oyster is he'll sip the liquor first and then eat the oyster. All the flavor is actually in that liquor.
Wow.
So you drink the liquid. Yeah.
So, John Bertino, how do we, when we open them at home, I spill it. How do we keep the juice in the oyster shell? How do you do that?
Well, what you got to do is you got to put the oyster flat on the surface, take a rag, put it on top of it, and then pop it open and try not to move the oyster.
Can't tilt it.
And then you got to do it all while it's still right there. Get the top shell and the bottom shell. That's why it becomes kind of an art.
How many oysters do you open? I don't know. What should I ask you? In a year?
The most I've opened, my busiest night, I did 1,100 in one night.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh,
my. It wasn't that bad. You never stop. Do you the entire night.
Do you ever want to go out when you see that a customer has ordered certain oysters from certain places? Because if you go to a place like the Oyster Club in Mystic, obviously, as the name suggests, they care. You know, look at John, what he's doing. They care where these oysters are from.
That's the great part about being here at the Oyster Club is, you know, I get to talk to everybody at the bar. And not many places that you get to actually talk to the shucker.
And Matt and I aren't very chatty, are we?
Oh, you guys are awesome, man. It's the people that come in here that really make it what it is. It's a blast. It's like having a dinner party every night of the week, but you just don't know which ones of your friends are going to show up every night.
So, Mark Rimmon.
What is the most amount of oysters you've ever seen one person take in?
It's funny, man. We had these two guys and a four-year-old kid come in on a Sunday afternoon. They ate 170 oysters.
Oh, my
goodness.
That's incredible.
The little kid, he had never had oysters, and he was putting them down like they were nothing.
I think I maxed out at 24 once. I feel like.
That's a lot. 24 is a lot.
Yeah, but that's the most I've ever had. How many? They had 100 and what?
170. I mean,
that's incredible.
I'm watching them going, look at these guys. They're having a blast. It's like they never had an oyster before, and they just struck gold.
Oh, that's awesome.
It sounds like they were on an adventure to introduce that child to the art of eating oysters, right?
Now they're going to pay the price, though.
Yeah, now he won't eat chicken nuggets anymore.
That's right.
No, I want oysters tonight.
Well, how do you describe the difference between one oyster and another? I mean, we know what that comes from, just like with grapes. But are you trying to psych out their taste, how much history they have with oysters? How do you do that?
The levels of brininess, pretty much, in an oyster. Some are just way saltier than others. The Fisher's Island I describe as crisp, clean, and refreshing. And when you eat it, you're like, wow, that really is crisp and clean. And it really is refreshing. Mm. Whereas the vinaigrette nectars, which happens to be one of the best oysters out of Rhode Island from Matt Behan Oyster Farm, it's a smaller, deep cup, slightly briny with a buttery, sweeter finish to it. Mm. And, you know, people are like, how do you taste that? And then they taste it like, oh, yeah, I really do taste that. It's fun to describe them to people and then watch them try them. You really can tell the difference.
So one quick question. Remember a few years ago, the kind of chic oyster to eat was the Boulon, which started in France, and then people in Maine started figuring out how to do this. And so you could get Boulon from France, or you could get Boulon from Maine.
Yeah.
What happened to that? Is there a new trendy oyster that people navigate toward?
People are going to navigate towards what I tell them is really good. And it's true. I mean, they're just going to be like, well, what do you like? And you know what? New England has absolutely the best oysters in the world, hands down.
Agreed.
There's nothing better than one of our oysters.
And we have them from Noank, even.
They're awesome. Those Ram Islands and the Noanks are delicious. Well, I think one of the top oysters is the East Beach Blonde, which is grown in Nineveh Pond in Charlestown, Rhode Island.
Wait, what is it called? East Beach?
I've had those. They're fantastic.
Yeah. East
They're
Beach
awesome.
Blonde.
Yeah.
Really?
And they're delicious.
They're one of the best. And that, between that, the Nineveh Nectar and the Fisher's Island, you can't get much better than those.
Yeah.
We have a personal relationship with all these farmers. When they deliver oysters, they're an hour out of the water.
Yeah,
wow.
Really?
There you go.
There you go.
What about from the east end of Long Island? They've got some good oysters there.
There's so many great oysters in this area. I mean, they're all great. And you know what? The best time I ever had shucking was at a Grateful Dead show up in Saratoga in the parking lot.
Nice place to
It was last summer at the Dead & Company show. I had the best time. There's so many people that wanted to try oysters, and it was such a blast.
And what would you drink with them?
I would drink either nice crisp beer or Pinot Grigio, I think, goes great with those oysters.
That's what was in my head. I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
I thought, there's a certain beer.
A nice blonde,
really
blonde ale or something, you know, a Pilsner.
Yeah, there's a French Saison.
That
would be kind of nice. Jacques Pepin introduced me to that beer at the Chinese restaurants, and I loved it. It has a kind of crisp quality. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, you're the best. Thank you, John Bertino. And we're going to see you soon at the Oyster Club.
I look forward to it. In
Mystic. Thank you for doing what you do and for sharing your knowledge with us so that we can be better at understanding these and opening them at home carefully, and you know, I think 1 to 2 minutes in the freezer if you don't, like, if you're not strong enough.
John, is my memory correct? Did we calculate you've opened up like 2 million oysters?
Yeah, right around there. You throw the music on, you dance around, and you shuck oysters, and people love it. I got my little dance that I do back there when I'm shucking.
All right, we're going to do some Father's Day. We've got a whole big thing about grilling coming up. You can grill your oysters, too. Thank you, John Bertino of the Oyster
Club. Thank you very much for having me. Alec, good to hear from you.
Hey, you too.
Have a good day.
Okay,
right,
you too.
Care.
Bye-bye. We love the local, as you can tell. Please support your local food growers and food makers for on-demand podcast delivery of the Food Schmooze Party every week. And if you sign up for the podcast, there's an archive of all the shows, and you can click on any one if there's something you wanted to remember from a particular show. Foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back with grilling.
Friendly lady, she says, boys, why are you here? Looking for a meal or just some oysters and beer? Pull a stool up at the end of the bar. End of a journey, taking us this far. Oh, oh.
Okay, sign up for our free podcast copy of the show that arrives in your inbox every week. Just go to foodschmooze.org and sign in for that. I'm with my treasured food buddies, Chris Brassberry, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine broker Alex Province, who lives in Hartford, Mark Raymond of Wethersfield, also our wine broker on the show. Our senior producer joining us on the show so often is Robin Doyon Aiken. I'm very excited about this because I love grilling. This is for Father's Day especially because, honestly, men love to grill and feel very connected to the food arts that way. But an increasing number of women are also learning to grill and
Agreed.
Love it. So,
I support the movement.
I'll share my grill.
I think all women okay. should grill.
And I'll share my grill.
Yeah.
Come okay. on over.
We're very fortunate about this because we have Weber's greatest hits. So the Weber grill is the most popular grill in the United States of America. And
yes.
I want to say personally that I think Chris.
You have four?
I have four.
Chris has four. It is
all the same?
A fabulous grill.
So we,
are you
what
a grill
you want
hoarder?
In a grill is
a grill
reliability.
Hoarder.
You really do. You mm-hmm. want reliability.
Mm-hmm.
You want it to function the same way. You don't want the parts to break down. So this is Jamie Perviance, and he's done this 125 recipe cookbook of Weber's greatest hits. Jamie, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Well, thank you, Faith. Good to be with you and everybody there.
Yeah.
Hey.
Well, great to have you. I am a lifelong learner when it comes to grilling. Can I quote you here? You say, the temperature of your charcoal fire depends on how much charcoal you use and how long it's been burning. Here's the part that I want to underline. Two things. The coals are at their hottest when they're newly lit, and they gradually lose heat over time. So, Jamie, when the charcoals get that ashy white on them, is that them at their peak of heat?
Yes. They are blazing hot at that point. They stay that way for a while, and depending upon the charcoal. The briquettes tend to last longer than lump charcoal, which actually starts out even hotter than the briquettes but loses heat more quickly, if that makes sense. So we're talking about live fire cooking here. This is cooking that changes over time, which for some people is really exciting because they get to interact with it and they sort of tame the fire. You know, they take control.
I always say that this stuff that you're saying right now appeals to people who like to drive a standard.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
They want to be in control. They like all the variables.
Yeah.
There's a whole other crowd that likes just the convenience of pushing a button or having the automatic. And actually, some people are a little of both.
Yeah.
Right? There are some that, if they have the time, say on the weekend, they're totally into the charcoal experience. They want to build the fire and tend it. And then, you know, on a Wednesday night when they just want to get dinner on the table, they go right for the gas because they know it's quick, it's easy cleanup, and it's so easy to control with the turn of a wrist.
That's right.
And my fourth and final Weber grill that I got was the one that's gas and charcoal. So it's charcoal with gas assist. And
so
that
awesome.
One rocks.
It's like a hybrid.
So,
awesome. I have the gas for when I want to use gas.
What?
I have the charcoal for when I want to use charcoal.
Okay. But wait, this is the best tip for me in the beginning of your book where you explain everything. I put a star on it because you said, once you have arranged the coals on the charcoal grate, you know, so far we've started the fire. They're getting that ashy white, so they're super hot. You've arranged the coals, some over to one side, some over to the other, depending on what you're doing anyway. You know what's not on the grill yet? Your charcoal grate. Because you had to take it off to set up the coals and to do that, get that all ready. You say, now put the cooking grate in place. Place the lid on the grill. No cooking of any kind. This was a key to me. You want to wait 10 minutes with that lid down for the temperature to rise up. That's with that closed, that temperature is going to get screaming hot. Ooh, your grill grate is in there. So when you put whatever you put down, wow,
that's
at 500 degrees, you're going to get a screaming hot searing heat
Love
on that
it.
Thing. You're going to get the marks. You're going to get that caramelized on the outside. This is the best tip in the whole book. Jamie, thank you for writing that.
Well, you're welcome. It is important. And if you don't do that, you know, the results will reflect it. It would be a little bit like trying to saute in a cold pan. You know, if you imagine putting a scallop down in a cold pan and then turning on the heat, you'll probably end up with all kinds of sticking problems and the food won't cook properly.
Well,
you know, one of the reasons we love the flavor of grilled food is it has that sort of charred, caramelized quality like you were talking about it. And you really need to get the grate hot. Now, I should say that not every recipe calls for that screaming hot heat right from the beginning. So you may want to preheat and then actually let the temperature drop a little bit because you may want to start with a medium heat. But in order to get to medium, you got to go to high first and clean, as you say. That's much easier at high heat. And then you just time it.
Here's what I want to get to because we have a video online of how to do beef tenderloin on the grill, thanks to Chris Brusberry, who's giving that lesson. And we have this recipe, thanks to Jamie and friends, and it's how to do beef tenderloin steaks with seared mushrooms and red wine vinaigrette. Are you doing this over gas grill, charcoal, what?
Either one. Whichever grill you have.
Okay.
The results will be similar, but a little different. Obviously, with charcoal, you're going to have more of that smoky outdoor aroma.
I know there's the charcoal briquettes that are soaked with that chemical business.
Don't go there.
Everybody's head is going, no.
Yeah.
But it's easy. So we don't, you know, if you do that and it works out, no judgment here. Even though Jamie said that. we've got lump charcoal, hardwood charcoal, which is
that.
Really
Get it
fantastic.
Anywhere.
I love
too.
It. I love you. And you can get it anywhere.
Now.
But it's
get it at your grocery store nowadays.
Okay. So here's your instruction. You're going to take the tenderloin steaks 1 1/4 inches thick. So most people, Chris, would get the tenderloin and then cut it themselves into these steaks. Or you go
get
to
it
your
done.
Butcher.
Yeah, or even in the supermarket, you can get them cut into steaks already.
Here's the trick. You're going to brush those steaks on both sides with oil, and then you're going to season them generously on both sides with salt and pepper, but you want them to stand at room temperature for 15 minutes, 30 minutes before you're grilling, because it's going to make the grilling easier. And then, you know, get your grill screaming hot. Now, here you go, Jamie. In a skillet on the stove, we're going to cook what? Bacon and onions, right?
I did that last night, and it smelled so good.
Yeah, that's the beginning of many great recipes, bacon and onions. Yeah, because eventually we're going to grill the mushrooms, and then mix them with this bacon and onion mixture just to improve upon their flavor.
We get the grill ready. Now we've got bacon and onions on the top of the stove. Now here's the thing. You're going to whisk in a bowl vinegar, mustard, garlic, these mushrooms that you have done, and a little bit of this vinaigrette get mixed well together. You get the grates all set to go. So take it from there, Jamie.
So now we're going to grill the mushrooms, which you can do right on the grate, but there's now a perforated pan, which I think is really good, particularly for small vegetables.
Yeah, I used that for the mushrooms last
night.
Yeah,
so Chris really grilled, good. You know, our chef in residence here, Chris, grilled this for us last night. Yeah. You used that, right?
I used that perforated pan. And you know what the other thing I did is I, instead of going back inside to the stove, I took that pan with the onions and bacon and I put it right on the grill, on a hot spot on the grill. So I did it all together, right?
Oh,
there
cool.
On the spot.
Okay.
That's a great idea.
But to get...
Some grills, of course, have side burners and you can
do that's
the bacon.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's my fifth Weber grill.
So anyway, when you do these steaks, you're doing them over direct heat and you're going to put the lid down so that it is closed. And it is really hard for those of us who cook at home because we're constantly wanting to look. It's like a lid on a pan. You want to look to see, is it done? Chris.
I have a thing on one of my grills that says no peeking.
How come?
Because you let
happens?
The heat, right, Jamie? You let the heat out.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, we've got this recipe at our website, foodschmooze.org. If you are not a beef eater and you want to do something with chicken, and you have been dying to try, or maybe you're an old hand at this, we're going to tell you right now how to do hickory smoked beer can chicken. This is really just fun. I love this because when you've got that chicken sitting up on, you know, beer can or whatever kind of can you want to use, the liquid inside that can is infusing the meat of the chicken under your grill. I do this at home.
It's so much fun, and it's really delicious. That beer is getting into the meat, and it's just providing a moist environment so that you end up with a really juicy chicken in the end.
And what are you putting on the chicken as a kind of rub?
For this particular recipe, I start with what's called a dry brine. You know, normally you think of a brine being a salt water solution. This is just salt on the chicken to season it up a couple hours ahead of time. It improves the skin and it improves the flavor of the meat.
What does that mean, it improves the skin?
So it actually dries out the skin because we like a crispy chicken skin, right?
So it pulls the moisture out.
It pulls the moisture out. It tightens up that skin so that when you go to cook it, it becomes crispier. Salt also penetrates down into the meat a little bit deeper. I mean, let's face it, chicken by itself can sometimes be a little you know, a little underwhelming in flavor. So this gets you some saltiness down underneath the skin and into the meat.
Okay.
So it's great if you can do that, if you have the time. If you don't, just salt the bird and you know, go right away. But after I do the dry brining, then I add a traditional sort of barbecue spice rub with onion powder and paprika, light brown sugar, and some pepper. Sprinkle that throughout, including inside, with a little smear of some olive oil so that it cooks.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, seriously. But here's the question. I've always wondered this. Why inside the bird? What does that sprinkling inside the bird do?
Well, it gets the seasoning closer to that meat toward the inside, along the rib cage particularly. Makes that meat taste better.
Okay. Where does the beer can come in is your question, right? So you open, if you've never done this, okay. So
you open. This is the best part coming up.
I wish we had a video of the action in the room right now. So you open the beer. You pour out about 2/3 of it.
Pour out. This is a guy thing. Pour into the beer.
No, it's not a guy thing.
The beer part.
So
you got to drink the beer.
You don't waste. We don't waste.
Okay.
Don't
all right. All right.
We're
so
not
you
wasters
use,
on the
you
show.
You use a church key can opener, and you make two more holes in the top of the can. And then you place that can on a solid surface, and you lower the cavity of the chicken over the can. So what's going to happen is that can with the chicken sitting on top is going to go inside your grill. So the beer that's in that can is going to infuse the
steam,
meat.
Yeah.
Some people add things to that beer.
Yeah, you can put
I, for instance, will pour all the beer out or drink the beer or get another can, and I put on the inside things like white wine and orange juice and garlic, and I do a kind of, you know, South American thing.
Oh.
You can do whatever you want with that beer. You could put pieces of chorizo, palacios de chorizo. You do all that. You put garlic and anything you want. You can just fool around in there. But we have the recipe at our website, foodschmooze.org. This is Jamie Previance. Weber's Greatest Hits is his cookbook, working with Weber Grill People. And we just thought this was great for Father's Day, for the increasing numbers of women who are starting to grill or have been grilling for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jamie, I love this. I think this is a real, this is a win, and it's so much fun, right? So,
yeah. Well, it's a great party recipe. It tastes great, but it also looks great. Everybody gets a laugh out of this chicken, literally standing up on the grill on a beer can. It's
What keeps it from falling over?
Well, it doesn't fall over because you've got kind of a tripod situation where the can is one leg, and then the two legs of the chicken are the other two pods of the tripod. I should say that there are now poultry roasters that mimic this situation. So
I have one of those.
And they leave space for the can of beer in that poultry
roaster. They have a liquid, you know, thing in the center of it. That's what I have. And it really does work. It's really great. So if you don't have a beer can.
I was intimidated the first time I did this, Jamie. I don't know what I was intimidated by. The chicken standing up on its own under the lid?
Would it fit?
Would it fall over? Would the beer put the fire out if it fell over? But once you do it once, I'm telling you, it's the easiest thing. When you open that lid, it's a wow factor.
So, Jamie, what I want to know is the chicken juices are falling into that can of beer. Then what do you do with that, with the juice that's in the can once you take the chicken off? Are you using it in some way?
No, its job is done. I wouldn't use that in any way.
No gravy
That's an interesting idea. I've never tried it. I do want to mention that it's important that there not be too much beer in there. I also want to endorse the idea of pouring that beer into a glass and then into your mouth.
Thank you.
But the thing about the quantity of beer in the can is if you use too much, it takes too long for it to get hot and steam and give you that aromatic effect that you're after.
And
so that's why you want to bring it down to a third or a quarter of a can.
So I think we should do a dessert, and that is your pineapple upside down cake.
Ooh.
I love pineapple upside down cake. This recipe has gotten so many good reviews when it appeared in your last book. And this thing where you flip a pineapple upside down cake over, it's a crucial moment and things can fall apart and all that. So Jamie figured this thing out where you've got a topping of fresh pineapple or from a can, which I like, butter, dark brown sugar, whipping cream, and ground cinnamon. Then there's this batter. So very quickly, how do these two things come together?
The pineapple and that butter and sugar mixture goes down into a pan initially, and then the batter goes on top, and then you just bake the whole thing like you would in an oven, but you're doing it on the grill.
Yeah.
And I should mention that the pineapple is grilled first, so it develops the beautiful flavor and also appearance. You get those gorgeous stripes on the pineapple, which is really nice when at the end you invert this whole thing and that's what faces your guests.
So this skillet is going over the indirect heat and the lid gets closed on your grill, right? And that's what bakes the cake part. You cut around the edges of the cake once it's cooked.
Right. Now you're coming up to the ta-da moment where you're going to get the cake out of the pan. Let it cool for a little bit because you've got hot sugar sort of boiling away. Rub a knife around the perimeter just to loosen up anything that might be sticking. And then you put a platter on top, like a round platter ideally, that's a little bit bigger than the skillet you've cooked it in. and you invert the entire thing. If you're religiously oriented, I suppose you say a prayer. But I, you know, I've done this probably 100 times, and I think it's worked 95 out of 100, because you've got this beautiful buttery, sugary mixture that's sort of the lubricant that allows this thing to release. You take away that inverted pan, and ta-da! There's this gorgeous cake underneath.
There is something about caramelized pineapple
sugar
with that cake, all brown sugar. Oh, my goodness.
Agreed.
So out of thing. This is at our website, foodschmooze.org, including information about this book, 125 recipes for every grill. It's called Weber's Greatest Hits. Our guest, the man in charge of these recipes, Jamie Pervaience. Jamie, thank you so much for being a part of the Food Schmooze party.
You are very welcome. It's been a pleasure, Faith, and all of you. Thanks for indulging in this great
adventure, right?
Thanks, Faith.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
See you. We're on WNPR, Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, I hope you'll listen for my 60-second Food Schmoozes. You know our slogan, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to my.
Thanks for listening to the podcast on your schedule. And when you need a little party in your life, we're here and online all the time at foodschmooze.org. And, of course, also on Facebook at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze.